New regulation 1596, charter school leader. It is for information. Dr. Bradshaw.
1596 is currently published. It was published on February 1. There is simply a one-word change from the regulation that was published in October of 2024. And that change is in 4.132. Instead of saying leadership experience in an educational or other setting, it says leadership experience in an educational, in occasional or other instructional setting. And so the board felt really strongly that the word instructional needed to be added to this regulation because it pertains to instructional administrators in charter schools. And the board felt that the wide type of experience that other setting could allow for was simply too wide. And so they put the word instructional in, and it was considered a substantive change, even though it was only a one word change, and therefore it has been republished.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from board members on regulation 1596?
I have a couple of questions.
Sure, go ahead.
One related to the title, charter school leader, wouldn't it be more appropriate for this to be titled instructional leader? Because in specifically taking a look at the definition where it focuses very clearly on instructional administrator, and that's why this was developed, because last year through legislation, heads of school were removed. Mm-hmm. And so the specific focus for this, if I'm correct, is mm-hmm. on the instructional leaders within the building. I'm wondering, in order to avoid any confusion, might it be better, rather than hoping that somebody reads the definitions, to title it as such?
So it's not that I disagree with you. It's that a decision was made to make as minimal changes as possible when we did this original, when we changed from the 2023 version of this regulation to this version. I'm not saying that in a subsequent iteration of this regulation that we wouldn't do that. I think it might be more appropriate. I would want to discuss that with our charter partners. but at the same time, I don't disagree with you at all. And it was, you're not the first to suggest it, actually. And it would be a little bit more specific if it were. The thing is, I wouldn't want to hold this up and do this again. It's already been a long time. We're waiting for the ERTC program to be approved. We can't get it approved until we have the regulation approved. And so I think that, we're just hoping that we can move this along so that the process moves forward.
The other thing that I see that's still not reflected in this document is any sort of proficiency demonstration that would be required. In 1591, the people that are applying to be principals in your traditional public schools have to take the praxis in order to demonstrate their proficiency. And I know that alternative routes programs now are required to have some demonstration, not only of program proficiency, but also the individual has to demonstrate proficiency.
Yeah, that's true. Regulation 291, I think, I can't remember exactly what section it is. I think it's section 4 of Regulation 291 that governs ARTC programs. There is a demonstration of competence that's required, especially for all leadership programs. That's in the specific leadership piece. And so my guess is that there will be a demonstration of leadership, I think, demonstration of proficiency or of something like that. I don't think that measure has been chosen. And so I would defer to the Educator Excellence Work Group as they work to approve the program that that is something that our charter partners can work with the department to come up with the particular demonstration of proficiency that they would like to use for their people. And then, and again, in the future iteration of the reg, if that's appropriate to include it, it could be included. But it, I mean, it does have to be part of the ARTC program. And so we, I just wasn't sure. We just didn't at this point.
I would feel a lot more comfortable even having a placeholder here, but at least some indication that there will be required some, yeah, whatever it is. And I know states are changing what they're requiring. For example, Massachusetts apparently has moved away from praxis and is now going toward a portfolio approach, where an individual principal is expected to define a problem for their particular site that they are doing their coursework, identify the problem, identify their course of action, put their plan in place, and then have a reflection at the end on what worked, what was a challenge, you know, what would they improve. So they've been moving toward a portfolio approach. But, you know, whatever it is, I feel a lot more comfortable having something identified here indicating that some level of proficiency has to be demonstrated to secure a certificate. Those are two comments specific to what's before me. I'm still struggling with this, Dr. Bradshaw. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I am still struggling with this. And any regulations that come before us, I am very, very conscientious about reviewing what's before us and trying to do my homework, because what you bring before us is so important. And I appreciate all of the discussions that you and the Professional Standards Board have had around this issue for the past 2 years. Having sat in and listened to many of those discussions, I know you've been extremely, extremely conscientious. I was curious as to what was the research out there. What was the research around licensure, preparation, and so forth for building principals? And I'll tell you, it was hard to find good research. I did find, however, one peer-reviewed study that significantly impacted my thought process around this whole issue. And it was a study conducted by Erin Anderson and Amy Reynolds called The State of State Policies for Principal Preparation, Program Approval, and Candidate Licensure. It was the only peer-reviewed research paper I could find on the topic. And what they took a look at was a variety of issues, including what should experience be, what should your degree be, should, you know, what role did internships play? This specific study impacted my thinking, especially around one particular statement that was made by the American Educational Research Association. And what they stated was that the purpose of licensure is to protect the public. Purpose of licensure is to protect the public. And you see that in a lot of professions. We've mentioned before in this body that you see it with lawyers. You know, even though in my past background, I may have done a lot of things that lawyers do, in no way would the Delaware Bar approve me to go out and represent people in a court, even though I've done arbitrations, I've done contracts, I've represented clients in termination hearings, but they would never allow me without a law degree and without having passed the bar to demonstrate my proficiency, be a lawyer. And the same way with doctors, that they require certain standards to be met and in certain ways that you've demonstrated your proficiency. And it's all to protect the public. And I see this with education to protect the students and to protect the parents that trust in us to provide them with the very best educators and leaders in those schools in order to do their job. When it came to teaching, this report said, experts commonly agree on teaching experience as a prerequisite for principalship. In fact, teaching experience can be seen as the beginning of preparing for the role of principal. This was further supported by other researchers, Goldebert, for one example, who cited that some of the best principals were those who were either successful as assistant principals in their previous work, or they were successful teacher leaders, that those were the people that tended to rise to the top. They went on to say, there's a common belief among education professionals that knowledge and experience with pedagogy is needed to be an instructional leader and to improve teaching and learning. Few professions would promote a person to a leadership position who had no experience in the field. Therefore, it makes little sense to hire principals without firsthand knowledge of the experience of teachers and students in a school setting. I mean, that resonated with me. When they speak to education, it says most licensed and well-respected professions require an advanced degree. To further professionalize the field of education, it is suggested that a master's degree be required. And I remember in one of the meetings that you had, the same evening you were talking about degree requirements, you were also looking at school social workers. And it was absolutely mandated. Those school social workers had to have a master's degree in order to be a school social worker. And I'm thinking, well, if you're going to require that of a school social worker, wouldn't you require it also for the leader of that school? Again, I read this. I read a number of the Wallace Foundation reports. I read the reports coming out of the Learning Policy Institute. In none of those reports did I see any one of those bodies or any of these researchers saying anything more than we need to research more. And I agree, because to have only one peer-reviewed research paper isn't enough. But also, I didn't see anybody coming forward and saying you don't need education experience and you don't need a master's degree. I didn't find that. And so, again, I thank you for all of the hard work you and the Professional Standards Board did. And despite other comments that were made that people making these decisions had an agenda or whatnot, I'm sorry. The professionals that made these decisions should be respected for their decisions, as well as the professionals on this body should be respected for their decisions. And that disagreement isn't necessarily a bad thing. It points to opportunity for further discussions. And maybe those further discussions could involve the state board, other than just having it come to us as something to vote upon. But again, thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you. Any further questions for Dr. Bradshaw?
I just have one question. It's more about semantics. On section 413, does that say the same thing, or is that something different from 4136? Like 413 seems to me to read, you have to have a minimum of 4 years of one of the following, and it lists those underneath. And then the last one, 4136, says any combination of the experience options outlined above.
I mean, they're a little bit different because you generally need 4 years of experience, but they can be, you know, one of this or two of this.
Right.
And that's common. We have that in our other leadership regulations because you could have, you know, for example, you need, well, up until this year, you needed 5 years of experience. But say you were a teacher for 3 years and then you became a reading specialist. And so we're not going to not allow you to become a principal because you have, so.
No, I understand. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is 413 reads like you have to have 4 years in one particular area, like as an educator at a charter school, leadership experience or military leadership experience. And then 4136 says, oh, but you know what? You can have a combination of any of these as long as it's 4 years. That's how I'm reading it. Maybe I'm not reading it the right way.
So, I mean, I think it's just it is a clarification that you can, you know, here is the type of unique 4 years of experience in one of these areas, but it could be a combination. And that was on the advice of our lawyer to phrase it that way. So I can't really say, you know, that was the best way unless you said, you know, 4 years of experience in any combination of these areas and just put it in the front. That's another possible way to have
that's
done
what
it.
I would think would happen.
Note taken for the future when we do this again.
Anything else? Rachel, thank you for coming this evening. Have a good evening. Next on the agenda, public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anyone signed up for public comment?
Yes, we do. We have two commenters for public comment on regulations this evening.
Okay. We will hear from speakers from the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room and in person first. Then we will recognize speakers logged in via the URL and that they have been signed up. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and 3 minutes for organizations. The board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Who's up?
We have Brittany Mumford from Delaware Kids Camp.
Brittany, come on up.
That's right.
Price is right. Yeah.
Come on,
Ben. Can be. Go ahead. You got 3 minutes.
Thank you for your time this evening. My name is Brittany Mumford, and I serve as the executive director at Delaware KidsCan. Before going into my formal comments, just because of some things that were said, I would just, as a general question, would challenge anyone in this room to tell me if they actually feel that for the last 20 years, the students at MOT Charter or the Charter School of Wilmington have been left unprotected or not academically served. That's an argument that I would be very interested to take on and very interested to hear. So good evening again. I'm here this evening to give comment on Regulation 1596 and the new language added by the Professional Standards Board. In December, the Professional Standards Board took power away from the State Board of Education. This happened when the PSB disregarded the established regulation process and overlooked the public feedback and community input provided to them during the allotted time because a few members disagreed with the direction of the proposed regulation. Instead, they refused to move forward and acquiesced to a decision based on the opinion of a small subset of board members that directly impacted our schools, our students, and our educators. This move effectively stripped away the authority of the State Board of Education and bypassed the process, making assumptions about what this body would support. Such actions undermine the very essence of our democratic processes and create unnecessary barriers to charter schools' ability to operate autonomously and effectively. It's crucial that everyone be given a chance to have their voices heard and be part of the decision-making process. By preempting a vote they assumed you would not support, they overstepped their authority and took on your rightful role. The decision on whether to support the regulation as written was yours to make, not for them to presume. It's crucial to address this overreach to ensure that assumptions do not undermine this board's authority in the future. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
And next we have Kendall Massett of the Delaware Charter Schools Network.
Ms. Massett, welcome.
Good evening. Before I start,
I'd like to correct something that I said earlier. I did hear from two charter schools. They said, actually, this past year, for once, they actually were not chosen for NAEP. So two schools that I had assumed were, or that I believed when they said yes, they were off by a year. Because the one before, they had had yes, and the many before. Good evening. Kendall Massett, Executive Director, Delaware Charter Schools Network. I'm here to voice our community's very strong opposition to the new wording in Regulation 1596 proposed by the Professional Standards Board. This word would prevent individuals from diverse professional backgrounds from becoming instructional administrators, even with the support and intensive training of an alternative routes to certification program. To illustrate, let's consider someone in this room, Dr. Griffin. During a fall meeting, you expressed concern that the regulation could allow just anyone to become an instructional administrator in a charter school, including yourself. You noted that you did not believe you were an appropriate person to do this work and you would ultimately fail in such a role. Well, I'm here to agree with you. You would fail if a charter school hired you without any knowledge and skills in curriculum instruction and assessment. But I'm here to tell you that would never happen. However, that's not what this is about. The essence of Regulation 1596 is that it opens doors. Regulation 1596 specifies that you don't necessarily need an educational background because our program will equip you with the knowledge and skills that you need. The rigorous 18-month program, which includes coursework, hands-on experience, and a mentor, is designed to prepare participants fully for the demands of leadership roles. So even though you believe you would fail, I would agree with you again if you did not have that rigorous training, but I'm here to tell you that I know you would do great with that training because you, my friend, are a pastor. That's your vocation, and I personally believe that that provides you with great qualities like empathy and all the skills that you've honed through your years of work. You also have the skills to manage a room and the people within it, from children to adults. With the targeted professional learning around K-12 curriculum, you would be provided fully to prepare you for that role. And someone with your schools could indeed become an excellent instructional administrator. Our original version of this regulation was crafted to allow individuals with diverse backgrounds such as yours to bring their unique skills to educational leadership, supplemented by intensive training in K-12 curriculum and instruction. It allowed someone like you, with your skills and experience, to have the opportunity to have access to the education and knowledge needed to be a strong instructional administrator. By embracing diverse backgrounds, we're not dismissing the value of traditional educational pathways. Instead, we're advocating for inclusivity and the opportunity to enrich our schools with a variety of experiences and perspectives. This approach doesn't benefit the individuals involved. It strengthens our entire educational system by fostering a broader range of insights and leadership styles. We're not asking for exceptions to standards. We're asking for a thoughtful approach to how we define qualifications, one that recognizes potential and supports it with rigorous training. Embracing differences doesn't mean that we're turning our backs on traditional or existing practices. It just means we're accepting and encouraging the diversity, equity, and inclusivity of a potential group of people that may never otherwise have the opportunity. That is all we're asking for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Need more business. Committee and meeting reports. There is an opportunity for members to provide information and written reports made available on eBoard on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. Would anyone like to share anything further? I can't run with you, Deb. I'm done. I don't have anything.
Well, I'm just saying, I think my report indicates there were a lot of meetings since the last state board meeting, but I think some of the NAEP meetings were particularly interesting in listening to different states that were cited for improvement as to what they were doing that they felt led to their success. Louisiana and Alabama were both identified as states that saw a great deal of success. And ECS had a panel of education specialists, people either serving as secretaries of ed, or we had a state representative from Tennessee, and also a special assistant to the governor in Colorado. And so they were citing things like focusing on and continuing to focus on science of reading, since they clearly felt that that was making a difference. But then they also identified other states, such as Rhode Island, which felt that a lot of their success could be attributed to their efforts around chronic absenteeism. And we heard a lot about that when we attended, Kathleen, correct me, was it ECS or was it NASB that we heard, ECS, that we heard Rhode Island's story of what they were doing around chronic absenteeism. A big concern, however, was the diminishing amount of ESSER funds that are coming into all of the states, because a number of these states also pointed to after-school programs that they were supporting, summer programs they were supporting, high-impact tutoring programs that they were supporting, and that with their budget so tight now, there was concern, would they be able to continue these programs now that the ESSER funds have either, you know, very much diminished or have disappeared altogether. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they get creative in order to continue the work and continue the efforts that they are making in these areas. One thing I wasn't able to include in my report that I did today, that I had the opportunity to do today, was to visit with the administrator, Dr. Edney, over at the Early College School. And I had a chance to go to both campuses, went to the middle school campus first. Gosh, it's amazing to see how you can transform an old Sheridan into a classroom setting. And I was very grateful for my high school Spanish classes, since the Spanish class chose to welcome me, hola, ¿cómo está usted? And were very surprised when I was able to respond, muy bien. So we then went over to the DSU campus to see the building that they are currently using on campus, and it's remarkable to see the learning going on there, getting to meet the teachers. And Secretary Martin, I'm like you, I like to get to see the kids. And so it was really great seeing some of the work. I've been talked into a couple of things. First, to go back, I'm eager for this, to see their capstone projects at the middle school level. That surprised me. And so I'd like to see the capstone projects that they will be addressing this spring as part of their presentations. Essentially, the high school class is shut down so they can dedicate the time on these students. Then one of the teachers has encouraged me that she said, you'd like to participate in the Getting a Pie in the Face fundraiser for one of the charities. And she said, you really want to do it? And I said, yeah, I'm a teacher at heart. Of course I'll do it. So I'm awaiting further, you know, word on that. Secretary Martin, if you want to join me for the pie in the face, I'll let you know.
Let me know.
You want to come too?
No, I'm going to take, I'm going to buy a pie.
Oh, okay. But that's it for my report.
Well, thank you.
Yes, I did not submit a written report. I apologize. Deb does so well with that every month. I did this past month attend two meetings. The first one was the first NASB member exchange. I was good to see three persons representing Delaware on that Zoom. There probably, I guess there were close to 20 people who were there. A good bit of dialogue around a lot of different topics took place there. And I think that as it goes forward, it really is a good repository of collaborative discussion amongst the different states. It's a shame that more states really aren't engaging in NASB. I think it could really help state boards. The second was I said yes to the opportunity to represent this board, since I am often the one who has the most to say whenever Reading comes up, to represent this board on one of their subcommittees, and it's the Subcommittee for Community Engagement. All of the subcommittees are taking their 13 stipulations that were in the legislation that put Reading together around redistricting. The Subcommittee on Community Engagement is dealing with five of those. So we had our first meeting earlier this month. We looked at those five stipulations, broke up into small groups, and kind of gave some feedback as to what we thought were the positives about them and how they were going to impact the larger work of Reading. So I look forward to what comes next, which I believe is, although I have another engagement that day, an all-day retreat on Saturday with all the subcommittees. Who doesn't want to take a whole Saturday from 9 to 4 and be doing Reading work? So that ought to be exciting as well. But I will continue to represent the state board. I'm appreciative that they heard our request when they were with us last month that we please be included. I think that too often, and this is Griffin, so once I step up here, somebody remind me it's not Sunday morning. I think too often we can, as a board, be almost an afterthought where all of the policy work goes on and then it comes to us and it's kind of like, okay, so we did all of this, all you get is a yay or a nay. And that's really not the way my mind works. I need to understand, at least for myself, how we got here. So I appreciate being able to be at some of these tables. Although Reading has been going on for four or five years at this point, and they've done a lot of the work, we're coming in at this stage because they're giving us 90 days when it comes to us to review it and give them an up or down from the state board. So I'm glad we're at the table. That's it for me.
I'll keep reporting next because I think it piggybacks off of Reverend Dr. Griffin's report. I also did not support or did not submit a written report, but planned on presenting because I attended all three of the subcommittee meetings for Reading. And in the operational committee, they looked at another four of the 13 stipulations. Similar process, broke us into different groups to talk about those stipulations. I'll talk about the fiscal subcommittee separately because they didn't look at any specific stipulations. But what I will say is to add to that was the process of there were three guiding questions that you were asked to look at when you went through the stipulations. One, does the stipulation make sense? Two, do you have the data to make an informed recommendation or suggestion? And three, if not, what data sets would you need in order to make a better or more informed decision? That will piggyback me into the fiscal responsibility, which really only focused on the revenue deficit of redistricting, which I had a ton of questions because I don't want to vilify any CFO, but they deal in numbers all the time. And if numbers don't make sense, I look at numbers like, do I have enough money to pay my bills, right? They don't necessarily look at districts and finances in that same manner. So the easiest way to explain it is tax money gained and local dollars expended. And they determined by redistricting, by their calculation, which again, I had a number of questions, would have a $20 million deficit by getting rid of those schools in Christina to whatever the interim plan or final plan would suggest. My question is, like, don't just spit numbers out at me. I need to know, are those what's included in those numbers? Is that the same in every district, right? You know, like, if we look at the city of Wilmington, is the tax revenue just not sufficient to take care of the local portion of those funds across all districts and not to try to make that seem like a push point against Reading. I say that because from being a principal and a school leader, I often remember our transient population working at all three schools in the Brandywine School District was different because of the houses versus apartment complexes in each of those feeder patterns. Makes a huge difference in your transient population. It's also gonna make a huge difference in your tax base, right? So I'd like to see what they actually listed and have the same things listed for each of the three districts. In summarization, I think all three of them came to the conclusion was that there's some things about the interim plan that they can't answer unless they know what the plan is. The easiest one is transportation. If the four Christina schools were to go to any iteration of the plan, what happens to the buses that were taking those students in Christina? Because we all know if you work in a district, those buses don't just go to those schools, right? And so now those buses still need to stay, but then what's the impact on those districts on receivership around transportation is an easy example, right? And how and what does that look like? So I think there's still a lot of work to be done. I agree with Reverend Griffin. It does give us the opportunity to be at the table to have that conversation that we can have prior to the 90-day times allotted for us to vote and review and revoke. So that's the end of my report with one exception. When I was a teacher, the month of February was always important to me because it's Black History Month. And oftentimes I would hear my students, other students say, well, why did they give us Black History Month in the month of February? It's the shortest month. And so I often would correct them to stop them from promoting ignorance around not understanding. So if you're not aware, and if you are aware, then I just further communicate. It started by Carter G. Woodson, and it actually started as a week, the week of February 12th, because that is the birthday of Abraham Lincoln, and February 14th is the birthday of Frederick Douglass. It was later expanded to a month. Now, if you take the Saturday Night Live version of why it was expanded to a month, because in February 20th of 1966, Reverend Pastor Meredith Griffin was born. So they figured we need to celebrate and make it a whole month versus just a month. So that is formally, so today is Mr. Griffin's birthday.
He didn't just say it was my birthday. He said the year.
If I can
add this, because I think it's important for me to say again, I don't know how much of a voice we're going to have because we are at the table on subcommittees, because the work the subcommittees do will then roll up to the full committee to be voted on and take action. Again, I'm appreciative to be at the table in any way. I'll say again, and I'll say again when they sit in front of me, Reading has a once in a generation opportunity. They are the fourth iteration of a group in the last 40 years who has tried to do this. And they have benefited from the work of all of the groups that preceded them. I am imploring them and again the General Assembly to do what needs to be done and let the mess be cleaned up on the other side. I think too often, I'm gonna say it the way I feel it. I think too often decisions are made for political expediency. I've said it to them so I can say it here. For the sake of a $42,000 a year part-time job, will we not do what's right for students? And that, if it needs to happen, let it happen. I was in another meeting for my vocation and we were talking about, are we willing to pay the cost for what the change is? And the question was, so Dr. Griffin, tell us, what is it going to cost us? My point was, it's going to cost what it costs. The question we have to ask is, does it meet the value that we're going to pay? I don't care what it costs. If nobody in here cares what it costs, if we think it's worth it. And so for me, We really need to, my point is, bite the whole apple, don't nibble at it, because if it took us 40 years to get here, do we want to wait another 40 years to do the rest that's not done right here? That's my public service announcement. I take birthday privileges to say that. Thank you.
Cash App is. Thank you. I'm glad we are. This is something we're going to push and get our feet, get ourselves at a table, even if it's a small table to start. But
yeah, absolutely.
You got to knock on the door for you and kick it open. But and gee, happy birthday. Yeah. Wow. All right. Who else we got?
Of course.
Go ahead, Sam.
So last week I was able to attend the first meeting for me of the Delaware Public Education Funding Commission. And it was a really, I really liked the experience overall. I thought it was, it's definitely very unique for me being able to see all these different perspectives from a different angle. Because usually, historically, I've seen people, discuss education from a theoretical perspective. And it was very different to view it and be part of it discussed from more of a practical perspective and see how funding was allocated in Delaware compared to different states. And similarly to what we saw earlier, kind of see Delaware's performance with certain levels of funding compared to nearby states, particularly West Virginia, Virginia, District of Columbia, Pennsylvania, et cetera. I learned more about funding allocation from different educators in our state, and I thought it was a wonderful experience overall. A more detailed and expansive report is already published on eBoard for me. Thank you.
Thank you for doing that, stepping up and doing that. Anybody else? Not. We'll move to the executive director's report. Ms. Smith.
Thank you. You have my written report, and I really just wanted to highlight an email that the department received today requesting volunteer virtual judges for Delaware Technology Student Association competitions. So their TSA competitions have six different categories, such as board game design, geospatial technology, video game design, things like that. So there are six categories. They have a variety of entries, anywhere from two entries in each category to all the way up to 15 entries in another. The judging virtually is just due by March 14th. It can be done at your convenience anytime. If you're interested in more information or interested in maybe serving and judging one of those competitions, please let me know and I'll get that set up for you.
Excellent. Anything for Ms. Smith? Okay, legislative update. We have Chief of Staff Lisa Henry to provide information. Good evening.
Hi, everyone. I think Kathleen may have given you a Britain update that I shared earlier today, but I'll just go through a couple of bills that have been introduced and then one draft bill. The first is House Bill 15, which is related to play-based learning. And Representative Moore is the sponsor, and she would like to encourage districts and charters to introduce more play-based learning in the kindergarten through first, second, third space. It's just been introduced and it's sitting in the House Education Committee. We at DOE have a conversation scheduled with Representative Moore for next week to learn a little bit more about the intent behind this and just talk through some things with her. Another one is House Bill 29. It has been passed by the House and is sitting in Senate Education. This relates to our public report cards that we have on our website, and Representative Shoup would like to have us add some things, change some things. And an amendment to that was done by Representative Ross Levin to add extracurricular activities and athletics. So we think we can handle that. There's no fiscal note or anything to that one. The third is Senate Bill 52. This is introduced by Senator Buxton, and this changes some information regarding pensioners and how they can come back sooner to be substitute teachers. It changes some income requirements and waiting periods. And then the last bill I was going to mention is Senate Concurrent Resolution number 14. It is the reestablishment of the Student Behavior and School Climate Task Force. If you recall, SCR 119 was last session. That was the same task force. They submitted a report as of November 1st of 2024. And Senator Townsend wanted to reestablish the task force to continue talking about the concerns and issues. The last thing I wanted to mention was there's a draft bill by Representative Morrison related to removal of school board members. His original draft had the State Board of Education as the authority to do the removal. He is since looking at that differently. The governor's office and myself had a conversation with him this week to think through some alternatives and some constitutional, Delaware constitutional issues that may be with the current drafting of his bill. So more to come on that. That one's not been introduced yet.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Lisa on any of the bills? I will discuss the draft bill. I want the board members to review it and send your comments to Kathleen. It deals with the State Board of Education. You'll be able to see the language, how many times our name is mentioned. And it was quoted to me the other day, nothing about us without us. So we want to take care of this business. We want to get ourselves set up properly on this one. So get your comments to Kathleen as soon as you can. We will be formulating a response. But I have nothing else. If anybody else has any questions for Lisa. All right, Lisa, well, thank you and have a good evening.
Thanks, you too.
Well, looks like the secretary's report is next.
Great, thank you. So a couple of things. First of all, like day one for me, I launched a website because I had heard about immigration in our school because I'd heard a lot of concerns from, I know Dr. Engel actually from before because of her role at the National Association for Secondary School Principals. I knew her through that. And I heard from other leaders that they were concerned about the impact on immigration in schools and the fears about raids and what this could mean and what's going to happen and things not coming to school. And would the Department of Ed say something about it? I couldn't say something until I was sworn in. And so as soon as I was sworn in, we were ready to publish the materials that I prepared. In the lead up to that, and I brought a lot of experience from my time in San Diego as superintendent of San Diego Unified. As I mentioned before, it was a border town, and during the first Trump administration, there were significant concerns. And so there, as a superintendent, working with local ICE officials to figure out how to have and allow them to do their job that they need to do and have us be allowed to do the job that we do, which is educate kids and find a way forward to do that and understand what the law is. So I didn't want to take a San Diego solution and drop it here in Delaware. I wanted to make sure I understood Delaware law. Governor Meyer and his team and the Attorney General were really clear on the laws here and how Delaware was going to approach that. So I launched the website. There's a landing page where you can see everything, sent out communication to charter leaders, traditional school leaders, and I called everybody I could think of calling because I didn't know anyone here yet, but who do I need to call? DSEA and the ICE officials, people that, so I wasn't going to surprise anybody. I tried to have no surprises rule. First day on the job, something big comes up for me on a topic that a lot of people had a lot of feelings and thoughts about. I wanted to make sure I had people understand that. So that guidance and the resources for educators and families that were concerned about possible immigration action in Delaware Public Schools went out on my first day in multiple languages. The website included information on immigration student rights, support available for schools and educators, the recommended action steps that Delaware schools can and should be taking. And then I linked the state and national resources for schools and families. And I wanted to, in my communication, which was also an open letter to the community besides letters to the school leaders, I said that I was going to reaffirm at my first state board meeting, which I am doing now, my commitment to student privacy, counseling, academic continuity, and a safe, inclusive learning environment. And I also urge all our local school boards to adopt resolutions that reaffirm the same commitments. And I put sample resolutions on the landing page if school boards haven't done it yet, and they want some samples about how to do it. We're just talking about the rights of students to learn. inclusive environment and understanding the implications of the law. So that went out. If you hadn't seen it yet, I wanted you to know about it, and I've received a lot of feedback on it, a positive feedback that they were grateful that there was something there for people to turn to. Then yesterday, I joined a few of my cabinet members, and I presented my first time at the Joint Finance Committee. I presented the department's budget. That was at the request of the Joint Finance Committee. They wanted detailed information about early literacy and about literacy and about early childhood and about the teacher pipelines. And so I loved the opportunity to present the budget. It was Governor Carney's budget being presented and defended, and Kim Klein did that with me along with several staff members. And I was able to answer questions and learn from the JFC some of their ideas and some of their concerns. So it was really helpful for me to be in that 6-hour hearing yesterday. Is that called a hearing? It felt like a hearing. Anyway, and then last week, Delaware joined the rest of the nation in recognizing National School Counseling Week. I think that was over a week ago. But school counselors focus on enhancing students' academic career, social emotional development, having a comprehensive school counseling program, and an approach to that is vitally important. And so I was able to attend their recognition event recently, and I love hearing about the way they work alongside teachers and educators and create the educational environment where students can not just succeed, but realize their potential, and the work of school counselors can never be diminished or needs to be always elevated as the importance that they play. School counselors set healthy, realistic goals for students and work in partnership with classroom educators to build a great school system. And that Delaware School Counselors Association dinner, I got to talk to some school counselors. So I'm getting closer to the students. Got to talk to the counselors who work with them every day and hear about their crucial work. And then Ms. Smith also let me know that you all wanted to know a few things you wanted to know about Governor Myers' executive order number one that he signed on day one, right on the day he was sworn in. This was about recognizing Delaware as a national leader when it comes to career-connected learning and pathways, the Delaware Pathways Program. I knew about it at the federal level. We lifted it up as an example nationally. And so on day one, Governor Meyer actually affirmed the great leadership Delaware has in this space, and in the executive order said, I want a 30-day group to look at ways that Delaware, as an employer, the state of Delaware, can put more apprenticeships and career-connected learning, because it's the governor's way of saying, I want to have our own skin in the game. We're the biggest employer in the state of Delaware, or one of the biggest employers. We should give kids career-connected learning and find pathways into state government. So that committee is meeting for the first time next week. We have a 30-day timeline to meet and come forward with some recommendations to get more kids into career-connected learning on apprenticeships at the state level. And then some of you wanted to know about the potential impacts of the United States Department of Education on Delaware, loss of funding, and other mandates that are coming out. I would just point to what I did with immigration, is understand what was coming out from at the federal level and figure out how to make that Delaware so we can focus on the work and not the words that we're hearing. And if it's bluster, if it's words, if there's something we need to act on, we will act on it. We have work to do. We have students in our schools. We know what needs to be done. And the governor's been very clear-eyed on protecting Delaware students and Delaware residents from anything that would prevent them from living their best life. And that's in the education setting. So each of the things that come forward, each of the letters that come forward, the potential loss of funding, we are monitoring that. We have great attorneys in this state. We have great support here to help us understand what they mean. I'll be putting out a communication on the most recent communication that came from the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, talking about eliminating certain programs within 14 days. You will be hearing from me on that very soon, on our holistic approach and answer to that. My overall statement, and I guess I have a lot to say about it because I just came from the federal government, but let's just be clear. If we overreact to anything coming from Washington, D.C., we'll be on the wrong side of history. If we underreact, we'll be on the wrong side of history. We have to be clear-eyed, true north, understand what our students need, and navigate that which is happening, not ignore it, but also not overreact to it. And that is the entire approach that Governor Myers leading his team across all subject areas, not only education. And I'm happy to be a partner with him in having that reasoned approach to what we see coming our way and making sure we vet it, understand it, and take action as needed. So that's what's happening there. I'm not concerned yet about any loss of funding at this point. And then you asked about NAEP scores. I think I just answered that earlier. And some of you are wanting to know about specifically, what can we do to circle the wagons? All of the groups are doing such great work. That is what I have found. I have found incredible work across this state. Everybody's doing lots of separate things. I like to see what's the puzzle box. Like, I'm holding a lot of different pieces. I want to see how to put that all together. And if some of the work is duplicative, some of the work is not getting the results that we thought, some things need to be stopped. Some things we need to stop doing. Some things we need to start doing. Some things we need to continue doing and do more of. But there's always going to be data that will back that up if we need to increase supports. And so I believe that a holistic approach, having a unified message around what education in Delaware means to our students, is something that I'm here to lead. So I appreciate your voices on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just one. I appreciate the thoroughness of your report. I really do. This is a question that I have kind of wrestled with since, and I'm, guess I'm not the newest board member anymore. I'm one of the newer board members. I wrestle with, where do we sit as a board? When I read Title 14, it's very clear in articulating the board will do this, the board will do this. And I read it as a very collaborative relationship with the secretary, that there's, that the board in many ways serves as a sounding board or advisors to the secretary. I've not experienced that at all in my short time on the board. And I was wondering if you had anything you could share at this point for going forward and how you perceive your relationship as the Secretary of Education with the Board of Education.
Well, I'm hoping I'm modeling it what I would like to do by the way I'm engaging tonight, the way we're having our open dialogue tonight, conversation, hear what you have to say about things. It's not understanding what the statute says or what the construct of this board should be versus how we actually want to do this in practice. I'm a collaborative leader. It's the way I've always done things, the way I taught kindergarten. Top down doesn't work. Bottom up doesn't work. You can't mandate what matters. And you all are in these seats for a reason. And so you have opinions and perspectives and thoughts around what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it. A simple way that I think about board, this is not board superintendent relationship because I'm not the superintendent, I'm secretary of education, but from a school district level, the board superintendent relationship was something for 8 years that I managed. I had 5 elected board members. This is a little different because we're all appointed. We're not elected. But the relationship matters in terms of the framing. Could be a board can be have clarity around what they want to see and why they want to see it in a school district. And a superintendent figures out how to do it, when to do it, and who's getting it done. And when the board starts getting in the middle of the how and the who and the when, they have gone out of their lane.
Absolutely.
They have lots of ideas about how and who and when because they talk to lots of people with lots of opinions, but you've hired the superintendent to do the how and the who and the when. That doesn't exactly translate here because we're all appointed and it's different, but I think we can carve a path in the ways that we work together so that your input and the ways in which you advise me. I'm learning a lot about this regulation that I had lots of conversations tonight. I'm going to go back and do a little more homework on it so I can weigh in on it. But your advisement and your input on this helps me carve a path that allows us to serve students better. And I think we can create that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think my biggest struggle, and I've shared this with Sean, I'm coming from serving on a local board, which is completely different.
Yes.
Than being on the state board. So I appreciate your words. Thank you.
I just want to second what Meredith's saying. I've been here since July and I sometimes wonder what am I doing? Like, what is our purpose? What's our mission? I'm very happy and very thankful to hear you say you do want to be more engaged and you do want to be more collaborative. And I think you've seen from everybody tonight attending different meetings and committee meetings, we're here to serve and we're here to help you and support you. So I hope you do lean on us.
The way I perceive it is that we all have different backgrounds and our viewpoints and we come from different places. The diversity is very helpful. You know, I'm more or less grassroots on the ground and engaged in the community and stuff. I bring that value added proposition. Some of us are thoughtful practitioners and professionals. but being open to receive those perspectives, I think gives a better and provides you with a better perspective of policy making and decisions. So
I need that. I want, not only need that, I want that and welcome it. And you're all here for a reason. This is not by accident. This is on purpose, and it's by design. And you're here to serve a reason. You have for a reason. You have a voice.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here, and we look forward to many meetings with you and successful
meetings. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. I want to say thank you to Kathleen. She onboarded me very well. I had a lot of questions about what do they do? How do they do it? What's happening? Because I came from a district and I had a different view. And so I wanted to make this as meaningful of an experience for all as possible. So thank you for giving me a really smooth on-ramp into my first Delaware State Board meeting. Thank you.
She does that for us all. She's outstanding.
It's called herding cats.
It was not. My board services officer in San Diego was, we need you in our lives. Okay. You have to program more.
Okay, but thank you. Time's been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. Smith, is there anyone signed up?
Yes, we have two people signed up.
Okay. We will hear from speakers from the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room in person first. Then we will recognize speakers logged in via the URL in order that they have signed up in the chat box. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and 3 minutes for organizations. As a reminder, the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Next, who we have? Brittany?
We're going to have, well, Kendall Massett signed up first, so we're going to let Kendall Massett go first.
Miss Massett, come on up. Good evening.
Good evening again. Kendall Massett, Executive Director of the Delaware Charter Schools Network. You heard my earlier comments on Regulation 1596, and while I hope to provide you with valuable information about a program happening in our community, if I have time, it's important to address something first. I want you to remember something you just said, President Brittingham. Nothing about us without us. For over 3 years, it's been 3 years, we've been dealing with this leadership certification issue. The State Board of Education is responsible for authorizing 22 of our 24 charter schools in Delaware. This issue directly impacts the children, teachers, and leaders of these schools. But not once has our community been invited to sit at this table to discuss this with you. Not once. In fact, I've been here on many occasions summarizing the thoughts, concerns, and ideas of our community in 3-minute sound bites, the only discussion that we've had. This should not be the way we have to engage. There is nothing in code that prevents this body from inviting us to sit at this table for a public discussion with you. Perhaps if you'd taken the time to ask us why we're so passionate about this, we wouldn't be here. I've spent countless hours advocating for the preservation of our school's autonomy, but maybe that would not be necessary if we could have had these important conversations from the beginning. And if you didn't want me specifically at this table, that's fine. We've got school leaders and board chairs that would happily come sit here and have this same discussion with you to understand our why. Now, with the last minute that I have, I'd like to briefly share a program that's making a difference in our community. First State Montessori has partnered with the Delaware Nature Society and the University of Delaware Water Resource Center to create a Green Trailblazers Club for 7th and 8th grade students. It's a pilot program that they hope to eventually be replicated within all of our schools in the city of Wilmington. It gives students the chance to engage in hands-on environmental education. Through this initiative, students learn about environmental issues and gain practical experience in maintaining outdoor areas, managing gardens, preserving local ecosystems. Activities including mulching, cleaning local waterways, and canoeing, in addition to classroom lessons that focus on environmental advocacy and careers in the field. We hope this example illustrates the impact our charter schools are making in communities and the opportunities that they provide. I encourage you to invite our charter school leaders to have this conversation and this conversation and be at the table for future discussions. Let's make sure we're working together to support all of our Delaware students. Thank you.
Thank you. Brittany?
Yes, next, Brittany Mumford.
Evening again, Brittany Mumford, Executive Director at Delaware Kids Can. I know I'm standing between everyone and dinner, so I will be brief because my baby also would like dinner. Well, I wanted to take this opportunity to publicly thank Secretary Martin for many things, but most specifically for the NAEP presentation this evening. That was, to my knowledge, but certainly during my tenure of a decade and a half in the Delaware political arena, the first time that our NAEP scores have been publicly discussed. In fact, our previous administration actively refused to publicly even acknowledge the existence of NAEP. So I love that we say we don't want to just admire the problem, but at least we're admitting that there's a problem, right? That's the first step, I think. So I know that there's a ton of work to be done, but we're admitting where we are, and that's a huge step. And then lastly, Pastor Griffin, I wasn't prepared to speak about this, but your comments earlier really resonated with me around it doesn't matter what the cost is. It's been decades. It's time to do what is right for our students. And I know that you are speaking specifically around school consolidation and issues within Newcastle County, but those comments could be directly attributed to the issues with our state funding formula as well. It's been going on 90 years. It's broken. We need to invest. We need to do what's right for our kids and stop dragging our feet. So I appreciate the opportunity to highlight that. I think it's just generally how we should operate, right? It's what is right for our kids, not what is right for adults, and that's why we're all here. So thank you again. Good luck driving to DC. I used to do that drive. I don't miss it. But have a good evening.
Thank you.
Yourself another minute. Don't stop.
Birthday in that minute.
I won't sing publicly. Or
thank you.
Do we still have the photo op afterwards?
Yes.
I appreciate everybody came around. I mean, stayed around so we can do a quick photo op of all of us, I believe, on the steps. And if you want individual headshots, we're probably going to do them right here. Is that correct, Catherine? If you want to do a headshot, just let everybody know that. But with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting.
I move we adjourn.
Griffin. Perfect. Man has made a motion to adjourn. I need a second.
Powell second.
Powell has second. All those in favor say aye. It is 7:49 and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you everybody for coming and please safe travels home. And I guess meet on the step.